A lot of questions to be answered. Ross Dellinger joins us now, college football writer from Sports Illustrated. Ross, we were basically just tying the pretzel together here that is name, image, and likeness. And I don't even know where to start with this. I know this is something that you've been talking about, but how do you even begin to break this down? States with their own legislation. We're waiting for, you know, the NCAA to rule. What about when it does start? There's just so many layers to this onion. I don't even know how to ask the question.
Well, usually you start discussing this topic. The only way to start discussing the topic is with a tall glass of booze of some sort, because it is incredibly complicated, and it's getting more complicated by the day. The easiest way I can explain it is, you know, we're heading to name, image, and likeness, and there's three avenues to get there, and one of them is, as you mentioned, the different, you know, state legislature creating a state law, and then one of them is the NCAA passing its own NIL legislation, and the third, the one that everybody is wants and seeking, is a federal universal kind of congressional law to govern NIL. But the states are beating everybody the punch, basically. And these state laws that differ, although slightly, from the NCAA's own proposed legislation will take effect July 1. And then, you know, after the Supreme Court rules in the Alston case, the NCAA will pass its own legislation. So schools in states with a state law will be operating under that state law. Schools in states that don't have a state law will be operating under the NCAA's legislation. And they are different, not a ton, but they are different. And then eventually, probably in the fall, maybe in January, we'll have a congressional bill that'll be the one that everybody operates under.
And where do you even start to continue this conversation? We'll do it, though. Ross Dellinger joins us, college football writer from Sports Illustrated.
Man, Ross, man, that's a lot to untangle there. So I'm going to go in a different direction. How soon or will we have expansion to the playoff system?
Well, yeah, I think the soonest we could have an expanded playoff would be 2023. Bill Hancock has been pretty clear and open about that. I don't know that we're going to have it in 2023. I know that, you know, right now on the steps to getting it changed and getting it expanded, we're on the very first step, which is a working group is been pouring over and examining models. They're done. So they're through with the first step. They've been working on it for 2 years, kind of under everybody's nose. They've been keeping it kind of secret. And they're done. And so the second step here is for them to present their models to the full CFP Management Committee, which is made up of 10 commissioners and Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame athletic director. And so the working group, which includes four of the commissioners, Swarbrick's on there, along with Greg Sankey, Bob Bowlesby, and Craig Thompson of Mountain West, they'll present their models in June to the committee. That's what's expected. And then from there, you move on to step three, right? And the full committee has to approve a model to recommend to the Board of Managers, which is 10 presidents and chancellors from the 10 FBS conferences, one from each, and then Notre Dame's president. And they'll have to approve it. That's kind of a rubber stamp situation. That's the last step. So that's the steps in the process. We're through step one. We've got a few more to go, but it does feel like, especially with the CFP a few weeks ago coming out and acknowledging this, it feels like we're very close, you know, maybe close as we've ever been to an expanded playoff.
I guess maybe this is the easier side. You tell me, Ross, and that is, how is that then going to be connected with the bowl games as well as the TV contract?
Well, yeah, it depends on who you talk to. They'll say that's the most complicated issue, is renegotiating the contracts. Wow. Yeah. They are 7 years into a 12-year contract with ESPN, and they have six individual 12-year contracts with the six major bowls, the Rose, the Cotton, the Peach, the Orange, the Sugar, all of the ones that are in the New Year's Six. And so you have to renegotiate and restructure all of those. You know, I talked to one commissioner who said, it's not that big a deal. Talked to another one who said it's incredibly complicated and very complex, and it's going to be an issue. It's going to be the biggest issue. I tend to believe that it's maybe not going to be as big a deal. But then again, the bowls can be tricky. They really can be sometimes difficult to negotiate with because they are tied to their to certain conferences, historically tied to certain conferences, like the Sugar with the SEC, the Rose with the Big Ten and Pac-12. And they're going to want their conferences to play in their games to get those conference teams. So it could be a little difficult. But I think the biggest issue is all 11 CFP committee members agreeing on a format, eight teams, 12 teams, you know, six teams, and then agreeing on, do we have, you know, first round games in on campus, who gets automatic qualifiers? Do they have automatic qualifiers at all? Those are the biggest hurdles.
Oh, man, well, Ross Dellinger, college football writer for Sports Illustrated. I guess, man, you make me think of so many other questions. I guess I'm going to start here. I mean, we're in SEC country. Where is Sankey with all of this? And as well as now they'll be playing, if this does happen in 2023, that'll be like 16, 17 games. By then, the NFL probably will be at 20. I mean, man, college kids are going to be playing like 17 games?
Yeah, that's one of the issues that certainly several commissioners have with this, is that this is too many games. Adding more than eight, going more than eight would be too many games. Because if you're a first round, if you play a first round game, those teams playing in the first round, if they advance to the championship game in a playoff with more than eight teams, they'll be having played 17 games, 12 regular season, a 13th game conference championship, and then four games in a playoff, which would be the same as an NFL team would play this coming year. So there's certainly some issue there. That a lot of commissioners feel like that's just too many games for a college athlete. And then you get into scheduling. You know, if you go over eight, you have to add two rounds. And that makes things really tricky from a scheduling point, because you're trying to schedule in this tight window from between the conference championship games, the first week of December, to the semifinals, the last week of December. And so it's this tight window. If you add one round, that's easy, pretty easy to fit it in mid to late December. You add two rounds, I don't know when you're going to have that second round in. You know, you might everybody might play on week zero. You just move up the whole schedule, which would mean conference championship games on Thanksgiving weekend. Or you'd move back the championship game, but that would put you in mid to late January with the national title game, which would kind of intersect with the NFL playoffs. So it's certainly, there's just a lot of layers to it.
Yeah, we're on with Ross Dellinger, college football writer for Sports Illustrated.
So, Ross, and as Blaine is thinking of more questions, I'm thinking about this. Let's say you get into this deal and you do expand it. And by this time, NIL is a thing, because it should be certainly worked out down the road at that point. I mean, why couldn't you have the Yellowwood semifinal game and the State Farm semifinal game? And if there's name, image, and likeness, you tell everybody that plays in this game is going to get $5,000, because it's part of your name, image, and likeness, because your name, image, and likeness will be in this playoff game. I wonder if that's something that could be tied in.
Well, I haven't heard anybody say anything like that or come, you know, that idea. But
you're welcome.
It's not a bad suggestion. Yes, I mean, there are some restrictions in some of these. In some of these bills and some of this legislation that would prevent athletes from getting a cut in certain kind of deals. And I would guess that would be one, because you have bowl contracts, but that is it's an interesting point. And, you know, who knows, you might have an athlete right now listening on the radio who just heard that, and maybe they'll file a lawsuit against the NCAA in 5 years when they're told they can't. They can't do that because of some legislation. So that's what we're going to have, guys, is just like every new law that comes out, you have a rush, immediate of lawsuits, and it gets straightened out by the court, and then you have a better idea of what you can and can't do. And we're going to have the same thing with NIL. Once the NCAA releases its own legislation, there's going to be a rush of lawsuits.
Interesting times for sure in the sports world. Let's go to this. Is the SEC finally set to allow transfers from within the conference? I'm sure Tennessee fans will be very interested in following that fact with the recent notification from Henry To'o that he would stay in the SEC and go down the road to Alabama.
I would think the SEC will. There's a lot of resistance against it within the league, from what I understand, but it would just be a PR nightmare if the SEC were the only conference left standing having an intra-conference transfer ban. Right now, I think 6 or 7 of the 10 FBS conferences have waived or plan to waive their intra-conference transfer ban. I think the SEC, the Sun Belt, and maybe the American still have it intact. I think all those teams, all those leagues will discuss it over the spring meetings, which happens this month. SEC spring meetings, I believe, will be in a week or two. And I would guess it's going to get some deep discussion there.
Absolutely, yeah. At the virtual SEC spring meetings. Ross Dellinger joins us, college football writer for Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, Ross, I have one more, and that is, if you get into the name, image, and like, I'm assuming all this gets approved and everywhere it's a go at some point, man, where does that put, you know, college athletes in having agents represent them for contracts for their name, image, and likeness? And then how much will colleges be involved in that equation? I would think they would be separate from it, but you just never know.
Yeah, agents in pretty much every legislation or law, agents are involved. They can be involved. They have to disclose their agreements and such with athletes, with the schools. The schools can do a lot with athletes when it comes to NIL. They can educate them. They can walk them through things. They can even approve certain agreements and stuff. But what they can't do in any way is facilitate a deal between an athlete and a brand or business or some kind of company or corporation. They can't have anything to do with it. Now, how you're going to enforce that is a real tricky issue. It's just like the same thing of how do you enforce a coach from telling a booster to pay an athlete $20,000 to come to a school. It's hard to enforce. We've seen that. It happens all the time. This time it's just going to be, you know, potentially a coach asking a booster who owns a company to put said prospect on a billboard and pay him $20,000 a year. You know, now it's almost going to be above board cheating in a lot of way. And it's certainly interesting, and it's hard to enforce. But schools are not supposed to have anything to do with the matching of an athlete and a brand.
Right, and that's going to open up the window for, let's say, how much pressure coaches are going to have on playing a player because such and such has a brand that's just as big, or not as big, but, you know, as big, you know, according to all the other athletes. And all of a sudden they decided, you know what, this game we're going to bench you for whatever reason, whether it be good or bad. They just made that decision. You missed practice. You were late to practice. I mean, man, that's going to be a part of the equation. Then that's going to be part of this transfer portal, and guys are going to get pissed. You're messing up my brand.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Another whole part of this is athletes who clearly already have a voice, we've seen over the last year, are going to have a bigger voice now because they're going to be represented by agents, as you mentioned, and they're going to be representing big corporations and companies, and they're certainly going to want to play, not just to put on a show for NFL, but they're going to play to meet and gain more attention so that maybe they strike bigger and more NIL deals. There's no doubt that that is going to be a topic, and I think that coaches are well aware of that, and they have expressed their concern in that, but everybody will have to adjust. You know, it's just that's the way it is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think this opens up, you tell me, Ross, a little more advertisement and popularity for the women athletes that are in college, because I guess what you can get lipstick or makeup line, advertise. You can do a lot of little different things, and there's a smaller market. You think it's going to open the window for even the women to have a lot of opportunity for, advertisement of their brand?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I think you could say that, excluding some of the high profile football players,
right?
Which you might have 8, 10, 15 at most a year, the Trevor Lawrences and Joe Burrows types. Outside of them, women's athletes are probably going to benefit from this more than anybody. You look at the Instagram follower counts of gymnasts and volleyball players, and they're huge. And that's where you're going to be able to strike bigger deals, these athletes, depending on your reach. And they have huge reach. So it is. It's going to be huge for them. And, for like women's volleyball players and women's gymnastics, there's really not a pro league, certainly not a pro league that pays a ton of money for them to go to at the next level. So
right. They
will be able to earn some income at the college level, and I think that's great for everybody.
Ross, thank you, man. Just some fantastic insight, and I know we're just breaking all kinds of ways to look at this for you. So, when you write those columns, make sure to spell our names right, man. We appreciate you. At Ross Dellinger, and as always, anywhere on the Sports Illustrated platforms. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it, Ross.
All right, y'all. Thank you.
Thanks.